You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift. My name is Jenny Dyster. I'm the recently appointed lay leader of this congregation, and especially warm welcome for those worshipping with us for the first time today, or whom we haven't seen for a while. Generations of seekers of truth and meaning from all over the world have worshipped as this fellowship since 1854. The roots of the place go deeper, for we meet on Kaurna land. We respect and bless their spiritual relationship with country and their elders, past and present. Our church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. Our principles are dear to us. They're on the white banner in front of the organ today. As a newcomer, you could well think that most people would agree with those, and you don't need to come to church to come to those sort of conclusions. And that's true. The principles are consistent with atheist, humanist, or religious perspectives. We don't prescribe your theology or direct you on a spiritual journey. The path is yours to find and follow. Any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world. I'm going to ask Jane to do the reading today.
This reading's from chapter 9 of Matthew Walker's book, Why Do We Sleep? Last night, you became fragrantly psychotic. It'll happen again tonight. Now, before you reject this diagnosis, allow me to offer 5 justifying reasons. First, when you were dreaming last night, you started to see things that were not there. You were hallucinating. Second, you believed things that could not possibly be true. You were delusional. And third, you became confused about time, place, and person. You were disoriented. And fourth, you had extreme swings in your emotions, something psychiatrists call being effectively labile. Fifth, and how delightful, you woke up this morning and forgot most, if not all, of this bizarre dream experience. You were suffering from amnesia. Now, if you were to experience if you were to experience any of these symptoms while awake, you'd be seeking immediate psychological treatment. Yet, for reasons that are only now becoming clear, the brain state called REM sleep and the mental experience that goes along with it, dreaming, are normal biological and psychological processes and truly essential ones, as we shall learn.
Congratulations, it's a healthy baby girl. We've just completed all the preliminary tests. Everything looks good. Just one thing. From this moment forth and for the rest of the child's entire life, she'll repeatedly and routinely lapse into a state of apparent coma. It might even resemble death at times. And while her body lies still, her mind will often be filled with bizarre hallucinations. This state will consume one third of her life, and I've got absolutely no idea why she'd do it or what it's for. Good luck. No doctor ever spoke those words, because all parents are familiar with the states of sleep and dreams, and we all know how crabby and cranky we get, and how our kids get, and our babies get when they need to sleep. Sleep is one of the four basic drives of life, the others being to eat, to drink, to reproduce. We know the functions of those, and scientists have given consistent and seemingly complete answers for them. Not so sleep. Evolution compounds the mystery. When you're asleep, you can't gather food, cook, socialise, court, mate, reproduce, nurture and protect your offspring, and it leaves you vulnerable to predation. But sleep's persisted. All animals sleep. This suggests it evolved very early, and the perseverance of sleep means there must be tremendous benefits that outweigh all the obvious hazards and detriments. Why do we sleep? Single function answers tend to be obvious, like to conserve energy, peculiar, an opportunity for eyeball oxygenation, or psychoanalytic, a non-conscious state in which we fulfill repressed wishes. The truth is, we sleep for a rich mixture of benefits for our mind, bodies and psyches. There does not seem to be an organ in the body that is not optimally enhanced by sleep. Hence Mark O'Connell's blurb on the back of Matthew Walker's 2017 publication, Why We Sleep. Matthew Walker got interested in sleep when his research into severed spinal cords came to a dead end. The decade beginning in 2000 was proclaimed to be the decade of the brain, and indeed it proved to be so. Matthew Walker was in demand as a speaker, and after he'd given a talk on sleep, a distinguished-looking gent approached him, thanked him, and said he was a pianist. He said he was intrigued by Walker's description of sleep as an active brain state, one in which we may review and even strengthen those things we've previously learned. As a pianist, he said, I've had an experience that seems far too frequent to be just chance. I'll be practicing a particular piece, even late into the evening, and I cannot seem to master it. Often I make the same mistake at the same place in a particular movement. I go to bed frustrated. When I wake up in the morning and sit back down at the piano, I can just play perfectly. 3 years later, Walker, produced research that backed up the pianist's intuition, but he did it with typing sequences, not piano. After a decade, he identified the type of sleep that was responsible for overnight skill enhancement, and that was REM sleep, N-REM sleep, in other words, non-dreaming sleep. And this non-dreaming sleep, especially in the last 2 hours of an eight-hour sleep. So bed at midnight, set your alarm at six, robs you of a potentially very valuable chunk of sleep. Now, 8 hours is the ideal length of sleep that was recommended when I was a teenager. People like Maggie Thatcher and Ronald Reagan boasted they only need 3 hours. We'll come back to them. Basketball coaches certainly don't agree, and the evidence supports the proponents of 8 hours shut-eye. For those of you who understand basketball, here's your graph. And for those who don't, especially if you don't care either, here's another graph of injuries. Instead of layouts and turnovers and other sports babble, you can see there's a consilience of evidence with the sports stuff and road and industrial accidents linked to sleep deprivation. Coming at it from another angle, the 1949 Geneva Convention recognises sleep deprivation as a form of torture and prohibits it. Even the Guinness Book of Records banned collecting data on sleep deprivation in the 1980s because of the perils involved. Alzheimer's disease causes disruption of sleep. A build-up of amyloid plaques in the brain and subsequent memory loss and loss of deep sleep has long been noted. But recently the question has arisen, can a lack of deep sleep actually cause the amyloid build-up in the brain to begin with? Note, Thatcher and Reagan both developed Alzheimer's. Dr. Maiken Nedergaard of the University of Rochester discovered there's a kind of sewerage network in the brain called the glymphatic system. It collects and removes dangerous metabolic contaminants generated by the hard work of your little grey cells. And just as the lymphatic system drains contaminants from hard-working muscles after a workout, the glymphatic system does the same after a day's neural activity. Nedergaard found out that the glial cells shrink up to 60% of their size during non-dreaming sleep, so that clears a lot of space around the neurons, allowing the cerebral fluid to more proficiently clean out the mess. Now, sleep alone will not be a magic bullet for eradicating dementia, I'm not suggesting that, but prioritising sleep could well lower the risk of disease or delay its onset. Insufficient sleep can be ruinous in all the major physiological systems in our bodies: cardiovascular, metabolic, immune system, reproduction. Early in my teaching career, I used to burn the candle at both ends, and I was often in a couple of plays at a time, and then one chunk after the other, without breaks. And by the time I was in my 40s, the pattern of bronchitis, pneumonia, plays, and sleep deprivation became very obvious. So I put myself on a ration, two productions a year, that's it. Rehearsals typically end at 10:30, but of course, after such a stimulating evening, you don't go down and drop into bed. You take 60 minutes to 90 minutes to wind down. And after performances, you can be as high as a kite at 1 and 2 a.m. in the morning. In my 50s, I gave up acting, directing, stage managing altogether and took to radio. And for 11 years, I was on the Expanding Horizons team. We produced a half-hour program on spirituality and ideas. That little plaque over by the kitchen door was an award we got from Radio Adelaide for that work. This was a lifestyle choice that served me well and probably actually embedded me in Unitarian thought. Now, the entertaining side of sleep is, of course, dreams. And as we know from Jane's reading, dreaming involves a lot of rearrangement of reality, as well as imagination and visual imagery. Many people will tell you that dreaming that you're flying means this, and dreaming when you're naked means that. I couldn't get a picture for that. When I put in naked people on the thing, it was just blocked. You know, online pictures, PowerPoint, it didn't work. Anyway, Matthew Walker tells you you don't need anyone else to tell you what dreams mean. For example, if you dream this, you will know if it's you who are overloaded with burdens or if it's a friend or relation that you're thinking of. In the Old Testament, Joseph, of the famous Technicolor Dreamcoat fame, dreamed his sheaf of wheat stood up while the others all bowed down. And unwisely, he shared this dream with his brothers, who sold him into slavery and faked his death by smearing the coat of many colours with blood and presented it to Father Jacob sorrowfully. Looks as if he was taken by a wild animal. Later, when famine ravaged Canaan, they had to go to Egypt, where Joseph had had better luck in the dreams department. The Pharaoh had had a dream about cows and another one about wheat, and they boiled down to the same thing. Egypt was in for 7 years of good harvests and 7 years of bad ones. Joseph advised for storing grain for the future and was put in charge of the operation. His brothers turned up because the word had spread grain for sale. Of course, they had to grovel some. Benjamin was too young to have been involved in the plot against him, so he's getting the hug in the painting. My point is, these dreams are not very obscure. Dreams are made up of the stuff in your own life. People, places, emotions, things you want to do, things you're afraid of. I remember dreaming that I could swim when I was 8, and the very next day I got in the pool, glided out from the side, and within half an hour I was swimming. Mendeleev, the Russian chemist, had an obsession with the known elements of the universe, and he made a set of playing cards representing each one and mucked around with them for years, trying to discover God's abacus. Then, after an epic struggle involving sleeping nights, he succumbed to exhaustion, and his dreaming brain accomplished what his waking brain was incapable of. I saw in a dream a table where all the elements fell into place. Awakening, I immediately wrote it down on a piece of paper. Only in one place did a correction later seem necessary. The periodic table is on the wall of every chemistry classroom. Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones attributes the opening riff of Satisfaction to a dream, and Paul McCartney reports that both Yesterday and Let It Be came to him in dreams. Lennon and McCartney both dreamed they unearthed gold coins digging in the garden very early in their relationship. Well, that dream certainly came true. It's a pretty common one. I've certainly had it. But my treasure didn't turn out to be as lucrative, and it didn't turn out to be songs. Now, dreams can enhance our creativity as well as our problem-solving ability, but of course many of our dreams are more like random rubbish, aren't they? Matthew Walker has researched the notion that dreams nurse our emotional and mental health, that REM sleep offers a form of overnight therapy and takes the sting out of emotional episodes. It offers emotional resolution when you wake up in the morning. I won't go into the details of how he established this experimentally. Let's instead pursue what might be happening when dreams are disturbing, nightmarish, or recurrent. Does a consummation devoutly to be wished to die, to sleep, to dream, to sleep? Perchance to dream, aye, there's the rub, for in this sleep of death what dreams may come. Now, unsurprisingly, the redoubtable Mr. Walker has studied war veterans suffering from PTSD. The extra noradrenaline in their system disrupts REM sleep. Walker proposed that controlling the amount of noradrenaline might be a first step to restorative as opposed to disturbing sleep. And somewhat serendipitously, a physician called Murray Ruskind, working with war vets, was puzzled to find a blood pressure medication called prazosin alleviated recurring nightmares, and it made the war veterans less scared of falling to sleep at night. The two met at a Seattle conference, worked together, And now the drug is used as a FDA-approved treatment for recurrent nightmares, and it does reduce noradrenaline. By now, you won't be finding this fictitious and admittedly hyperbolic ad puzzling. Scientists have discovered a revolutionary new treatment that makes you live longer. It enhances your memory and makes you more creative. It makes you look more attractive. It keeps you slim. It lowers food cravings. It protects you from cancer and dementia. It wards off colds and flus. It lowers your risk of heart attacks and stroke, not to mention diabetes. You'll even feel happier, less depressed, less anxious. Are you interested? Now, sleep is big business. Back in 1942, when people had very little to worry about, just World War II, 8% of the adult population in America slept 6 hours or less at night. Now 25% of adults do, so that's tripled. In the UK and Japan, the number of people sleeping fewer than 7 hours, which is the current recommended minimum, is now 39% and 66%, respectively. No wonder sleeping pills sell well. Catch is, they don't actually produce restorative sleep with the natural cycling of dreaming episodes and non-dreaming episodes throughout the night. And there is a very, very unfortunate side effect, death. Now, here's a graph showing the estimated global economic cost due to sleep deprivation. Now, Australia's not on these graphs. Referred to various sources and, of course, found a range of figures. And at best, we were a bit better than Canada, right? And at worst, we're a bit worse than the UK. So that was between $18 and $44 billion for the Australian economy, sleep deprivation. Businesses, governments, the military, the health industry, especially if you're a doctor or a nurse, all conspire to rob us of sleep. And when these institutions are not responsible, we have only ourselves to blame for sleep procrastination, late-night TV, social media, excessive consumption of caffeine, alcohol, food too late in the evening. So what's to be done? The first thing is probably education. Do the reading. Exchange information. The next is prioritising. Good health isn't just about diet and exercise. Sleep is equally important. Now, it's one thing to keep a sleep diary and manage your own sleep. The rest of the family is an altogether more challenging proposition. If you rabbit on about blue light and the evils of social media, you will not inspire your kids to follow your splendid example. You really need to keep your mind on the positives. As a society, we need to stop regarding early rising as necessarily virtuous. If you can find a school nearby, instead of one that requires a kid to catch a bus before sparrows fart, your child may get an hour or two's extra sleep a day. We are fortunate in Australia that 80% of our schools do not start before 8:15 in the morning, and 50% of them before 7:20. That's the case in the US, and those kids are dragged out of bed shortly after 5 to get on the buses, to get to school. This might be, of course, why the US seems to fare so badly in standardised tests compared to their European counterparts. It may also explain the high incidence of attention deficit and defiance disorders. We all know how cranky sleep deprivation makes us. Now, in Australia, school started at 9 when I was a kid. Now it's common for it to start shortly after 8:30, and this move is in the wrong direction. Many sporting and musical extracurricular activities begin even earlier, sometimes earlier than 8 a.m. These are very worthwhile activities. But we could create time and space for them if we finished the straight academic guff by 1 p.m. and cleared the afternoon for cultural pursuits. Education isn't the only realm which needs an overhaul and even some political action to initiate reforms. Transport and truckies, hospitals and doctors, nurses, factory workers, all sorts of people need to have their need for sleep validated instead of being told they're lazy, ill-disciplined, or lacking in what it takes to be a good practitioner or a good worker. Now, I hope you found today's service thought-provoking and encouraging of more shut eye and not too much of an academic lecture, self-help talk. It wasn't intended to be. The truth is, somebody very close to me was diagnosed with sleep apnea, started on a CPAP machine and is doing brilliantly. The machine told her a lot about her sleep, so we're talking about it, and I realised I was a six-hour night person, generally, and that's not too crash hot. I have embarked on self-education, and I'm keeping tabs on my performance, which is none of your business. But the education stuff I have shared with you today, it remains for me to say good day and sweet dreams to you tonight. Good night, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.